The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
At 26 minutes past nine, thank you for the text on different things, but I see Carmel says, couldn't agree with you more about the two popes. Loved it, especially I was living in Rome at the time. They got it all spot on, including the torrential rain on the night of the election. For me, Jonathan Pryce was utterly convincing. He became Bergoglio, who of course became Francis. A joy of a film, and that is something we are very much agreed on. The original and the best, meanwhile. My guest this morning has played not one but two of the greatest roles ever written for musical theatre. First as Jean Valjean in Les Mis, and later in Phantom of the Opera, as of course the Phantom. Colm Wilkinson, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan.
It's always good to see you, Colm. How's life?
Amazingly average, actually.
Is that right? You need to get out more and have some crack. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's
let's
right.
talk about all of your comings and goings, because I think what I'd start at the beginning in some ways, 10 of you.
Oh, you're going back. Marriage
I'm going back
Road.
That far.
Yeah. Road, yeah.
10 of you in the house.
Yeah.
In
12
Drina,
with the mum and dad, yeah.
And your mother doing what?
Trying to look after us, I suppose. trying to make ends meet. No, we were okay, actually. The old mama had a fairly decent job. But there was a lot of us in that small house. We had to move, unfortunately. We had to move when I was 10, 11. Hated it. Hated leaving Mangerton Road.
Did you?
Great place to grow up in. Oh, yeah. The valley and the green. No, that wasn't before it was an industrial estate.
Yeah.
And community spirit, people, the whole thing was wonderful, yeah.
And your mother was into the amateur dramatics, wasn't
she? Yeah, down across Malina where she was born. She was sort of amateur dramatic time, yeah. And singing, played violin, played a mouth organ a little bit as well.
Did she?
Very musical, very, very musical, yeah.
Your father had a few musical instruments going too, did he?
Yeah, a mandolin, eventually a banjo, a tenor banjo. Used to strum away. I don't know where he got that from. He did do that, yeah.
How did your mother find time to...
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
To get the instruments going, if she had 10 of you.
She played very little violin. Fiddle to him, maybe. I just remember her showing me the violin one time after we moved down to Grove Park. She was educated at Girton Abbey outside Cross Malina, and the nuns taught her how to play violin and et cetera. And she sort of it was sort of a finishing school as such. So she was well into opera and that kind of stuff, you know.
Now, you obviously went to the States quite young, didn't you? You were
15.
15 years old. How did you fly to the States at 15 years old? Mm.
I went with a band called the Chris Lamb Band. We flew all right, no doubt about that. First time I was ever in a plane was straight out of Dublin, straight into New York.
Like at 15 is pretty big.
15 or 16. I may have celebrated my 16th birthday while I was in the States. Yeah.
And when you, like from going from Drimna to New York at that age.
No, I went to Grove Park first, Ryan. I went from 11... into Grove Park about 12 and at 15, yeah, left 15, 16, left Grove Park for New York. Yeah.
Well, I'll never forget landing.
Culture shock.
That's what I was going to say.
Total culture
shock. Seeing New York for the first time is...
Oh, well, I mean, at my age, I mean, that's 60 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, to see those big, long gas guzzlers and all these sort of cars, all the traffic and the hubbub and the... Yeah. The noise. It was an amazingly exciting city at the time.
When did you, Colm, when did you realise that you were, your voice was going to get you places? How old were you?
I don't know.
Were you 5? Were you 15? Were you 25? Like, when did it become a serious...
I was standing outside the Federation when I was 14 years of age with a guitar, waiting to get picked up with bands. I don't know what delusion I suffered under. I mean, when I think back on it, and it's only been recently I've been thinking back on these things, because we moved from Toronto, as you know, and I've been going through the attic and going through the old stuff and thinking of the career and the not looking at it purposely, just the way the stuff was happening, the way I was looking through this stuff that we had to take back, and the whole sort of arc of what we did and where we came from and what we did in our lives, Deirdre and I. was all there in front of me, and I was just saying, geez, I mean, it was just work to us, as I told you before. But then I began to realise this was a bit of a journey, all right, with all the people we met and all the places we've been.
Yeah.
I arrived, I don't know, I really had a passion for it. I really liked doing it, I suppose. I don't know. It's maybe just showing off. I don't know.
Well, everyone has a microphone in front of them and likes it as a show off in
some
ways.
Oh, absolutely. Total. But I used to practice up in my bedroom a lot, very shy, perform with, when I did these things, I used to do intervals for a band called Vic Mellows.
Yeah.
And I would sing when they were having their cups of tea or something at the intermission, myself and my mate would get up and I'd do Come On Everybody, the Eddie Cochran thing, yeah. And with my back to the audience. I was too shy to look at the audience. I would freak if I looked at the audience.
Have you still got that
pre-show
nerves?
After? Total nerve head.
Never conquered them?
No, and opening night's the worst nightmare of all time, getting through anything. That's the way I am. I'm just a nervous performer. I just happened to go through hell getting there. I enjoy the process. I enjoy getting there and singing, and I have great passion for singing. But getting to that stage, I say to the kids all the time, nerves are normal.
Nerves are normal. And is that regardless?
Not as bad as me, but they are normal.
No, but they are. I often say it to guests who are nervous before a show. I said, look, I'm nervous. You should be nervous. It's weird not to be. But to have them after, I suppose, all these years, given what you do, does it matter what size crowd? Is it just the idea of getting on a stage regardless of size?
It's fear of failure. It's fear of not being... And I over-practice. People say I'm a perfectionist. I'm not. I'm a progressionist. I just keep on working and working. And I think, so when the red light goes on, I know something will come out.
You're not a perfectionist. You're a what?
I'm a progressionist. I like to get things to where I feel is comfortable for me.
Yeah.
That might be way ahead of what other people think you're a total lunatic. But I like to get things to where I feel comfortable that I'll be able to do it.
I mean, Deirdre's sitting outside, and on another day I'd ask her to come in, but I'd never put her on the spot. I'd love to ask her through the window, is he impossible to live with? I mean, I know you love him and all, but it's what she's saying. We'll find out in a second. But do you think you'd
I
was going to say, are you a tough egg to live with now? No, she says you're a joy to live with. Okay, thank you. Joy to the world.
Deirdre is an amazing woman. I mean, that's 50% of it right there, maybe more, 60, 70% of it there.
That
backup. You need that. You need somebody to tell you, you're doing okay. Yeah, you'll be fine. I'm always self-doubt.
Since
do you not suffer? Of course, you're super confident. You're super.
No, now don't take that tone, Colin.
Hold on a sec. Congratulations on the Gay Byrne thing. That was a wonderful tribute you did to him, and also the toy show. Man, I had to go back out of the room about five or six times just to lie down, watching you leaping around like a demented druid. I don't know where you get that energy from, but I'll say one thing, Ryan. Yeah. I have never seen trust. Children trust people or trust a person like the way they trust you on that.
Thank you.
Very seldom you see that nowadays, because all this thing of looking at kids and all this thing of interacting with kids, mm-hmm. it's sort of a bit taboo now.
It is.
It's a bit creepy.
Yeah.
You have this amazing sort of affinity with children. It's absolutely magic to watch.
I always wanted to be a dad and then I became one. And then my girls got kind of older, so now I have these other children.
But apart from that, children. These are kids that you just bring in from different, and they all trust you implicitly.
Yeah, that's nice.
That was wonderful to watch.
But anyway, thanks for saying that. And the point
not
is
at
that
all.
They,
well deserved.
They have great confidence themselves then, because they'll tell their stories.
But you give them the confidence.
Well, thanks
you
very much.
You give them the confidence.
I was just once saying about Deirdre, though. I just want to talk about her, because I love the fact that I've met you down
you love Deirdre.
Kind of love what she does for you. Yeah, I love what you do for each other. I've met you on and off down through the years. And you're probably the only celebrity, I should say, singer, artist, shall we say, who I've never met you without Deirdre by your side. I think Brendan Grace was a bit
she
like
doesn't
that
trust
too with
me.
Eileen. She does. No, but I just think it's very, very, I think it's romantic. I think it's supportive. I think it's kind. I think it's, you're 50 years married next year. Congratulations.
Well, Deirdre's dad was a musician. Deirdre's dad was a musician. He was a trumpet player originally, a band leader. He worked in the Royal. He worked, and that's where his, Deirdre's mom and dad met. And then he became, he worked for RTE, became a conductor, arranger in RTE. For me, growing up, I don't know whether I should rap on too much about this. It was always a hobby. A hobby was looked upon by my family as a hobby. He's playing a guitar. He's going out to America. And it was always, when is he going to get a real bloody job? It was all that kind of vibe. I went down to Deirdre's home and for the first time I saw a musician, a fully professional musician with a loving family. And I thought, you know what?
They
people
get it.
Can do that.
They get it.
People can do this. Yeah. And they can do that. Now, I wasn't at Bobby's standard, but they can do this. So that was a great plus for me, great confidence builder for me.
I just reading about you just before this interview, I got the impression your dad and yourself had a pretty, was it tricky?
No, tricky. Very tricky, yeah.
Did he come to see you when you started in the big, like Jesus Christ Superstar?
He came to see me on my last night. On my last night.
What?
I don't know what his problem was. Yeah. I don't know whether he wasn't... he was always, always, when is that guy going to get a decent job? I think the first time he really thought I, when Les Mis hit. And I signed a book because Trevor Nunn asked me, he said, when you're kneeling down to pray in Les Miserables, you got to think. I said, what's the thought process there? He said, well, think of somebody, you know, holy, like, you know, the Pope or whatever. And I said, yeah, okay. The thing that came into my head was my old man. He was a sort of a sick Catholic. When he was in trouble, he would pray. So he was down on the knees praying. And that's the thing that struck me to use in the scene of. So I wrote a little thing on a book. I didn't get on well with him. I didn't talk to much to him because we didn't have much in common. And I said, that inspired me, that the moment I saw you praying in the front room. You must have been in really dire, because they were downstairs because all of the rooms upstairs were filled with the kids. And he used to go around them with a book under his arm saying, do you see this? This is my son, you know. That was the first time when Les Miserables hit that he sort of acknowledged that I was...
How old were you at that point?
I think it was in... Well, I think it was in my early 40s when I actually got Les Mis, yeah.
Kind of took him a while to... come round to
well,
your...
it took him a while. I've been in the, look, don't ask me why. I've no idea. P.V. Doyle was a great friend of his. And he said, you've got to... You know your son is in the West End playing Judas for the last 3 years. Have you seen him yet? And he said, no, or something like that. And he said, you've got to go and see your son, you know. He wasn't that interested. I don't know what the deal was. I really don't know.
He mustn't have considered it a real job. Was he saying that to you? Like John Lennon's Auntie Mimi.
Oh, that was the bit, yeah. When is he going to get a real job? He's worried about supporting kids and this kind of thing. But when I suddenly he realised this was a long gig and this was a hit show or whatever, like Superstar was running on and on and on. No understanding of it.
Did you have peace in the valley with your father when he died?
Sort of, to a certain degree. There was my mom and dad split then, the marriage broke and split, and there was a lot of animosity going on between. I took my mom's side in this, so that was another wedge.
Another chapter.
Yeah, it was another chapter, yeah.
Okay. Mm. I want to hear a bit of your singing, Bring Him Home, and the reason, the reason I'm doing it is because you own it. Mm. No one will be able
to... Well, I owned it 30 years ago.
You still own it 30 years later. No one will be able to sing the song.
It's just wonder.
Just a piece of it. You wonder?
Mm.
Stop that.
You can take, you can give, let him be, let him live. If I die, let me die.
Yeah, no one can do that. Yeah, you're gassed. You talked all the way through that.
I'm sorry, man.
No,
sorry,
because
I heard it before.
How do you feel about that song?
I feel very proud. I feel very proud that he wrote the song for me. And I feel very proud of other things that I did in the show that he rewrote around me. Because that show originally, by the way, a lot of people don't know, was written for a baritone. It wasn't written for a tenor. So when I got the part, start learning the part, this is too low. So I start jumping octaves.
Sure.
And that's when they start writing in all that stuff for a tenor and writing. I have to rewrite the whole show around his voice.
Yes.
So when he wrote that, there was V8s going in all over the place. But no, it's wonderful to have a song like that written for you. But that, when we got it, it was a different animal, you know.
I can imagine.
It sort of changed it a little
bit.
But
the singer and the songwriter, it was like it's like Burt Bacharach and Dionne Warwick. They just came together and said, "We got this," and you got together.
Well, he came back from Paris and he had it, and he started off. He said, "I got this song. I got this song. I must believe the song. The song. The song. The song." And it was in the Barbican, and I said, "Oh, okay." He says, "I wrote this song because they said Valjean has to have it." If we want to talk about this, Valjean has to have a song to sing in the barricades. But he said, "Oh, 2, 4, 6, or 1, they're not big enough." No, he needs a song, prayer, something like, not a prayer, but he needs a song to sing over Marius, the sleeping Marius. And it was John Caird who said to Herb Kretzmer, "I think this sounds like a prayer that triggered the lyric." Mm. And he came back then. I didn't have any lyric. All I had was Claude Michel Schoenberg down in this rehearsal room, and he dragged me down and he said, "Hey, to play with this melody, the melody." And you know that kind of vibe that the French go on. It was a Charles Hasnow voice job, you know. "What do you think, old man?" And he had popped records out, and somebody said, "Oh, jeez." Anyway, I thought, "Oh, that's interesting." So it's gone. There's about 2 or 3 different sections to it. But he eventually wants to put the lyrics to it. I wanted to do it up. It was in A. I wanted to do it in B because I felt it flowed it better, up a tone from what it was. But it was eventually ended.
And you spent how many years doing Phantom in Canada?
I spent 4.5.
4.5 years.
1,700 performances.
How many?
1,700.
And how many a week was that, roughly?
7, 8. Yeah, the thing about it is, I, again, up in the attic in Canada, which is a lot to be...
That's where you keep the mirror. And not the paper now.
No, the attic in Canada. Yeah, the attic in Canada was, I reckon, 15 years in musical theatre, doing 7 to 8 shows a week.
Good Lord.
That was the culmination of the whole thing. That was the tot on that period of my life. I couldn't believe it. 15 years, and people say, "Yeah, well, that's probably where I earned my get lost money."
Let's have a listen.
Sing once again with me.
Compliment it ain't necessarily so, that version you do on Stage Heroes,
cool.
Your
that's
gorgeous
cool,
album
yeah.
I got recently. The Rolling Stone magazine voted you one of the five best singers in the world, and obviously Les Mis and Phantom were all part of that success. Can I ask you, why did you decide to come home to Ireland more recently?
Always wanted to be home, Ireland. We never really emigrated, Deirdre and I. We were always missing Ireland. Now, the places we were in were fabulous and they were great to us and we had a great lifestyle. It was just dragging the kids around on the coattails all the time. So that's why we eventually ended up in Toronto, as I told you before. I went in for 6 months and I stayed for 30 years.
Yeah.
But as I said, I've been on the road for 60 years, and that last sit down was the longest sit down we've ever had in any city. 30 years. Prior to that, it was moving around. We'd been on the road since in the 50s, you know, from the 50s. But it was very successful, the show. The Phantom was very successful in, and they looked after us very well. The kids were going to school. They had a permanent sort of sit down for that length of time. We sort of reared them, the basis of them in Toronto. So it was a good city. It was a safe city, and a good educational system.
I hear great things about Canada. I've never been, but they were thanks again, lucky to have you. Brian Nolan in Galway says, great to hear Colin Wilkinson again. First saw him in the early 70s in JC Superstar with Lochray Coral and Dramatic, where he stayed for a week.
Right, yeah,
made
yeah,
us all
yeah,
so proud yeah, to be with him there. Yeah. Second time was meeting him after a Les Mis performance in New York, where he graciously took time out to meet with us backstage, an amazing and totally humble Irish icon. Ryan says another. Fiona in Wicklow says, Colin Wilkinson is a true legend and a national treasure. He sounds like a beautiful person. He has the most amazing voice. We, the Irish people, are so proud of you, Colin. What a great artist he is. He will always be talked about in years to come. Well done, Colin, in all you have achieved. You strike me as the sort of person who doesn't realise how respected and appreciated you are. So I'm delighted you're getting this today. Is that fair to say, Deirdre? This is a yes, we're all happy about that. I've always had extreme anxiety, and it has curtailed any chance of me becoming a performing artist. So I admire Colin for 40 years, and bless him. Remembering in the 60s, Colin with the action in the Nevin, Glass Nevin, always great, says Eamon in Dublin 13. Pass on our affection to Colin and Deirdre from Lillian and Robert Chambers. Oh, well. Sure, I know Lillian and Robert, neighbours of ours. Colin introduced me to a love of musicals as a child, and 40 years later, he's still my favourite. He will be my ultimate Jean Valjean to me, and thank you for your beautiful music. And of course, Hugh Jackman was a big fan of yours when you filmed, you played the bishop in the movie, handing the metaphorical torch, as it were, the candlesticks to him in that film.
Yeah, he's nice, very nice guy, Hugh.
Big fan of yours. I just want to hear you sing a bit more. Hang on. And on goes the love. Does CT remember the song Amokaji and Lena Gokdina Gwiv? Let's rock. He sang it in school. And of course, you did, didn't you do the Let's Make It Your Kind of Country?
Fianna Fáil, back in the day, that was a single
that would have been in a few houses. You're going to be playing St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Yes.
December 21st.
I'll see you there. Pat Egan promoting it.
No better man for than that.
And it'll be gorgeous. Oh, I think there's some tickets left, but not a lot.
Well, your voice in St. Patrick's Cathedral will be something to behold, so I'm going to see you there.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, do you think Falls and Prison Blues will be okay in St. Patrick's?
Yeah, even better. But then, sure, listen,
the Irish choir with Veronica McCarron conducting them. Fabulous young guys. Girls. Okay. We got the O'Neill sisters and Rachel Coyne.
Oh, Rachel, yeah, she was with us on the Toy Show.
One of your guys. Yeah, great. One of your proteges. And the choir are great, and I'm doing two songs with them. I wrote a song called We Will Sing Now, and it's about mental health, because I'm a bit close to that, and I like to get more awareness of that going out, and it's about darkness into light, that kind of thing that's happening in Ireland, and more awareness of that situation. So I wrote this song about that, and the choir are going to do it with me. Hopefully I remember all the lyrics.
You will, of course. Yeah. Colin, it's been so good to see you, and to you and yours, happy Christmas, and thank you for your time.
Ryan.
There's a song close to your heart called Harcourt Street.
Oh, God, I didn't get to Brian Byrne. Brian Byrne helped me out big time in this Harcourt Street.
No better man. He's a great composer.
Yeah. And I didn't... Can I say the Irish youth... Musical Theatre Society, Seamie Campbell, were starting this new impetus right across Ireland, north, inclusive of north and south. We're going to start a whole amateur musical society or musical organisation with the Royal Irish Academy of Music.
Great.
And we're going to encourage young kids to come in and learn. A lot of professional guys are getting on board. I'll be doing master classes and stuff like that.
What a great
thing
to do.
I want to see young art. The bar here, Ryan, is so high. The bar is so high in terms of getting these young guys out and about. And I tell you, there's going to be some, and encouraging young writers to write musicals, to write music, because they're going to have a safe place to do it. And we will have great guys looking after them.
It's a beautiful thing to do, and keep us posted as to
I
how
will.
It all goes.
Well, I will, yeah.
Colin, see you soon.
See you soon,
and
thank you so much.
Happy Christmas and the family.
Thank you so much, and the same to you, man. Thank
as
you
always.
So much.